This week on RSBNB Update, Double XP Live is around the corner, but this week's patches on accessibility steal the show. Does it warrant a trip back to the Arch Glacier? We go back and find out. Then we preview Kroos' changes and discuss inflation, taxes, and item sinks. This is RSBNB Update, episode 854, recorded Thursday, November 4th, 2021. The Sound of PVM. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. Just Hannes and myself here. Just the two of us.
Just the two of us. We can make it if we try. Right?
Come on, That's right. And we are going to make it because we got some very, very interesting patch notes that help on the accessibility front. I don't know if they're meant to be accessibility or immersion-based, but we just had a wonderful moment here before the show. We're going to go through all that. We're going to talk a bit about the RuneScape economy, some of the stuff Old School's doing that came out today with that. So lots of fun stuff on the way here to be delivered by Tannis and myself. He is Tannis79. In-game, and I am Shane12088, and if you want to follow along, you can find show notes at update.rsbnb.com. And I think the first thing we have to do this week is just start with a reminder that Double XP Live is now underway. By the time you guys are hearing this, starts at Friday, November 5th at 12 p.m. GMT. Any plans?
Not so. This is how bad Double XP has gotten. I realized today that the last double, so I'm probably going to do mining, right? I did mining last Double XP.
Yeah.
But all I have done has been mining or wood cutting in between that time. And I just now realized that. And I'm going to be going back to mining. So, but on at the same time, you know, my family will be gone. My wife's taking my daughter to a Girl Scout camp out, so I'll be flying solo tomorrow to kick off Double XP. So I'm hoping to catch up with people on Discord, and you know, maybe take it back like it used to. You know, just get some laughs, some drinks, and
go for a nice long stretch of Double XP.
Yeah.
I honestly should be doing Slayer, but still, I can't be bothered to, and it stands in my head that I would much rather be doing a Reaper task than a Slayer task at this point. So take that for what it's worth.
Well, wouldn't that, well that should be doubled as well, right, your Reapers?
They should be, but I can only do one of those a day, unfortunately.
Yeah, so, that's true.
But all the usual,
Double XP's 10 days.
Yeah, all the usual restrictions apply. might try and get a Slayer task in here and there. Might try the Hydrix Dragons, I guess, again, because you always speak so highly of those.
Yeah, they're XP machines, man.
Yeah, I wish we could force that as a task.
That's true.
But we can't.
That's true.
We can't.
Well, yeah. Whoa. Yeah, you can.
Dragon?
Dragon could ask, yeah.
No, okay. Yeah, but you can't just force it. Like, you can't use a mask, or you don't have something similar to Reaper's Choice until you get 120.
Lanakea, VIP tickets.
I guess.
You're off to the races.
I guess. And combine that with a good block list that...
you know, I'm going to get you to do some Slayer, Shane.
I know. We do
best
have
skill in the game.
Because we do have the monthly... We do have the round table, not this weekend, but next weekend, that we always work into a double XP, so hopefully people will have some XP around by then. But also happening this week, first races for the Zekar front on hard mode. And with this, congratulations are in order to, as Jagex says, the amazing Lady Alyssa, who... killed Zook, and as a result, they don't say exactly what the time was in terms of how long it took, because they were running a world first for fastest. They were also running a world's first for just, you know, the first hard man kill. And I believe the one that I just mentioned was Lady Elisa, but we will, of course, have information on the fastest hard mode as well. But I think with that, we can just jump straight into the patch notes this week.
Yeah, I mean, I think the patch notes are the star of the show.
Yeah, they are. And we're going to get to the one that you're precisely talking about in just a wee bit here. So starting off, the bad exchange rate achievement has been fixed in the Zekar front. And for anybody wondering what this is, there was an achievement that was slated so that if you tried to alchemize a piece of Tokkel inside the arena, you would get yelled at, and there's supposed to be an achievement for doing so, but it wasn't activating properly. But that Zook's seated rain fire attack will now reach players who are hugging the barrier of the field. Fun little way of getting around and ignoring that. An entry for Zook kills has been added to the adventurer's log. Adding further ammo to a quiver already holding the same type of ammo will now correctly update the stack rather than replacing the existing amount. Of course, this is referring to Pernix's quiver, one of the mythical rewards that you can get after the Zekar front was released. An issue has been fixed that prevented Death Spore arrows from working as expected during the Zekar front update, in that they are now consumed upon use, and their sprout from death effect now actually has a chance to trigger. So previously, these arrows would have just been expensive pointy sticks that you were throwing at people, and you would have been better served using your regular bolts.
Yay.
Fixed an issue with the igneous capes that prevented them from being stored in the keepsake box. What was that?
I was saying, edit. I don't know.
That's okay. That's okay. We do things openly here. We don't need to put an edit note in for that. We'll need to really put an edit note in if someone's computer crashes or something to that effect. It's at this point I'll say that I actually utilized the rest of Free Death Week last week, and I got all three of the capes.
Nice.
So, that was fun. I'll talk about that later. Updated the color scheme for the Slayer creatures found within the Sentistan sewers. There we go again, the name of the sewers comes up. Fixed an issue where the Jad Souls were not counting towards the Reaper task inside the Zekar front, and added preventative measures to stop players teleporting out of the instance right as Hurricane dies in order to repeatedly fight him.
Oh.
And part of the reason this is a problem is that these higher waves, like the triple Jad wave, Hurricane, and whatnot, are actually quite lucrative in terms of the fight, and you're only supposed to be able to fight those once. But another thing that was coming up is that Hurricane is thresholded, or was thresholded at 40 kills for when your chance of getting the pet would go up. So people were spamming this in order to get the Hurricane pet.
Mm-hmm.
No.
I mean, you can't blame people, right? I mean, what other pet takes you a freaking hour right? to get, you know, like that?
Yeah. You should go back to the kiln, because even for me, in my first run through it, it only took me 37 minutes to do the kiln.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not
bad. Damage stacked on Zook as he's defeated can no longer cause multiple kills. These are some of the hot fixes. We talked about these last week. Players will no longer crash and disconnect when using the Magma Tempest ability, followed by clearing the auto-cast spell. That's a weird one.
Mm-hmm.
Additional hits from Wild Magic and the Omni Power abilities now hit nearby targets when combined with Greater Chain. This is actually really interesting, and it seems as though people are getting back into this idea of the magic meta. And since we started hearing about this cape, Greater Chain has shot up by about 50% in value.
Yeah, you know how people are, right?
Yeah.
Like, once they get started, once it's in people's minds, then... I mean,
it's
looked
kind of hard to shake.
Yeah, do you remember what weapons was it that did that? Over a rumor, it was like the dumbest thing. Was it Drygor? It's not the Drygor.
I don't know. I don't know.
But yeah.
But, you know, lots of fun discussions on combat meta that happen in that same regard. and also the scripture of full now increases damage received instead of reducing it. Oops. Once again, another one we talked about last week. But as you were mentioning, the star of the show this week, the Glacier, the Arch-Glacier, has now had voice lines from the mages added to the boss fight.
And that is inconspicuous.
Yeah, I mean, it's one sentence.
Yeah, that doesn't describe what happened. Yeah, they added voice lines. That doesn't tell you. That's not the half of it. They added a narrator for the fight. Yeah. So even if you can't see it very well, you can prepare. This should be standard going forward, every boss. Once again, it's hard to determine because that patch note is so inconspicuous. You know, like you said, is it immersion? Is it accessibility? It's one of those things that it's both and it's good for everybody. But this was exact. I made a point of this when this front came out. I was like, if there were just some audio cues, I would feel so much better and I could manage this a lot better. And I'll be damned. I mean, and it's not just one thing. Like, there's different lines that make sense that kind of let you know what's happening and where you're at in the fight. And
yeah, I want to just get a bit of a preview here, and then we can talk so about good. How good this is, because you need to hear this if you haven't. So I'm going to give you guys a bit of a preview right now.
You can't attack it while the smaller ones are nearby.
So the minions just spawned when it said that. You can't attack it while the smaller ones are nearby. I'm going to let it continue for a bit.
Kill the Glacians first.
Your defenses, World Guardian.
Focus your efforts on the smaller ones.
So what happened there is that I killed three of the Glaciites, and then it activated the Frost Cannon, and that's when, as Inadra said, ready your defenses, World Guardian. And the entire fight now is telegraphed based on what these mages say. So, Tanis, I think you're actually going to be able to find success here at the boss now that these have been added.
I do too. I am so happy about just this patch note. It's such a quality of life update. It's an accessibility update. You know, granted, the Arch Glacier still has, you know, there are still some things, right? Like the contrast is what it is. But with these cues, with these audible cues, I can at least prepare for that Frost Cannon. I can. It's just beautiful. I would just kiss whoever did it. I'm telling you.
I don't exactly know who it is, but
they're awesome, and I can't say enough. Like, I really, really hope that this is something they can incorporate going forward.
Yeah. The cue for the Frost Pillars is the air grows colder. Yeah.
Well, and it tells you this will suck your strength, yeah, or your power or something, yeah, like that. I mean, it's so, and I know for sighted people, right, it's like, it might feel like it's telling you how to do the fight. But for me, it's given me that little bit of feedback that I need to really be able to get in there and enjoy it.
Yeah.
With this and the ability to set your mechanics, I believe this could be the most accessible boss in the game at this time. And that is with all of its contrast problems, with its blue on blue on blue, it's still probably the most accessible boss because you can determine those mechanics. And now you have narration of the fight. And I don't know of any other boss fight that does that.
Yeah. And, you know, when it's time to prayer switch, it tells you that the glacier is going to be changing its attack style. When the core comes out, it says you have to avoid the core. That means it's time to attack one of the arms. It doesn't say that exact same thing, but it puts you on that path of needing to do that. And we've been so adamant on this accessibility bandwagon with these fronts that we've been talking back and forth about, you know, what front is going to be the front that handles accessibility in the best way. And we've had problems with Carapac. We've had problems with the Glacier. We had problems with Krosis. The Zekar front, you said last week, was pretty decent in its own way. And the interesting part, I think, that comes from all of this is that these are things that should be standard when it comes to fights. Not, you know, just to hold people's hands through it. Because from my perspective, it provides an extra layer of immersion. But from yours, it's a much-needed accessibility plank of the game. And I don't know what the story was behind the scenes with this, whether they weren't ready to go on launch or if they had trouble slipstreaming them in and they didn't get to add them until this point. But going forward, I think there needs to be a discussion within the dev teams and talking indirectly with QA, and directly with QA, about working these sort of accessibility features into the game. Because if you can work those into the game, you greatly increase the number of people who are going to be able to interact with the content. And, you know, we had so many sad stories from the first three fronts that we were wondering, are we going to be four for four? Yeah. But we're starting to see improvements on this. So that's good. At least it shows they're being receptive to these changes.
That's the important part. And, you know, we'll talk about one that, you know, a little later, that I appreciate them trying, even though might have missed the mark. At least they're listening, and that's all I ask. Because it's been a roller coaster for me. I was looking forward to this content as much as everybody, right? Like, going into the Elder God Wars, I was presented with with that little tower defense minigame that I never was able to get, you know, all the way through. And that kind of set the stage. And then we go into Carapac, and Carapac just had the worst field of view issue that I've ever had. Just with the way the mechanics of that lightning was and everything. Yeah. And then the Glacier was better, right? Although it, you know, once again, it was a lot of contrast issues with the Glacier, and not being able to, like, see the whole thing at once made it hard to know when those mechanics were coming. That's why I was hoping we would get audible cues. And then, you know, once again, I'm super hopeful for the skilling boss, right? That's my thing. It's going to be awesome. And it had some challenges as well. But I was hopeful for the Takar, because that has always... I've always done pretty well with that. That's always been something that people were kind of surprised that I could do. And I really think the thing that saved that is, one, being able to manage it, being able to manage, you know, how many things you're fighting at once, and then the contrast. Like, that orange and that
black
dark,
on orange, basically, it was.
It's, yes, like, that is what really makes a huge difference. And there's not a lot of, like, there's not a ton of movement, right? The less movement for me, the better. So that's, you know, then they circle back around and they add this to the Glacier and kind of change the whole equation. Because now, like I said, it's probably the most accessible boss in the game.
And that's really saying something, and that's wonderful. So
good job, guys. I mean, seriously, from the bottom of my heart, good job.
Yeah. All right. Next patch note, very small in comparison. The pest control UI is now repositioned under the chat box on the mobile client, and haptic feedback can now be toggled on or off in the mobile game settings under UI customization. And for anybody wondering what that means, is haptic feedback is whenever the device gives you a little knock when you long press or something to that effect. So you can turn that off if you don't like that. An issue has also been fixed where the system keyboard was opening during agility course cutscenes. Oops. Mm-hmm. Resonant anima changes. The Zekar creatures outside of Zook's arena now drop resonant anima of full correctly. This is good, because even going into last weekend, full anima was still selling for 65K each.
Wow.
Yeah. And you get, 100 and a bit from each Zook kill, so that was fun. But more on that later. Having the ring upgraded with a faction no longer decreases the amount of anima gained from the bosses. And once again, this is very important because everybody was camping Karapak and the Glacier, but getting kills on things like Zook and Krosis meant that the Krosis Bic anima and the Zook full anima were much more expensive than the Jazz and Wind anima. So this should start to see these coming down in the following days. Also increase the amount of anima the player gains from killing creatures within Sintestin themselves, like the Glacers and the Nodon.
Yeah, they need a little buff, I think.
Yeah, because previously, really, the only reason to kill the Glaciites and Glacers there were, of course, if you had a Glacier skilling task and you wanted the chance at the boots, you wanted clue scrolls. But now, obviously, if you want Wen Anima, that's another reason to do it. A missing hiding spot in the Fortunes mini-quest has been re-added, allowing the mini-quest to be completed. Added translations for warning messages when gathering darkened fungus in the Krosis fights. Obviously, those weren't translated to other languages. And we're going to talk about an upcoming patch note that's not in-game yet, so we'll see just exactly what happens with this. But this is the other one you were talking about in a tweet via Mod Shrew. He posted that the particles in the Krosis encounter will no longer be green, white, and red. These will instead be blue, yellow, and red, which should hopefully improve colorblind accessibility during the subdued boss state.
Yeah. And we looked at these, didn't we, Shane?
Yeah.
I couldn't tell a speck of difference in any of them.
So for listeners, when it comes to colorblindness, what exactly is it that you can and can't see?
So I can, because of my damage is in the central retina, it hits, the rods as well as the cone cells. And for me, I can have, it's most noticeable with blue, and green. But whatever they're using red wise, I don't.
It's halfway between red and pink.
So for me and for a lot of people with central vision loss anyway, it's less about the colors. It's more about the contrast. And they could achieve this by just having dark red, and like a light, even like the color they had in the middle. That's pretty light. So if you had that in, like a dark something, because we see the dark pixels.
Yeah, those are actually shadows.
Right. But, I mean, if you could make shadows out of it, you could surely make the little bubbles out of them.
So
right?
Let's just say, can you tell the difference between the one on the right that's red and the one that's on the far left that's blue?
No.
Okay. What about the red and the yellow in the middle?
No, the red it's too light. There's no contrast. That's That's the thing. Like, it's not.
So what
just
would you? What would you do then? Would you do like a, say, black for the ones you're not supposed to click? Maybe like a black smoke.
Yeah, I would either do a black or like the dark red kind of smoker pixels that you see, like from the capes.
From like the Constitution cape, for example.
Yeah.
Okay. And maybe it should be smoke instead of instead of particles like this, because these are, you know, very spread out and such. But so if they were, say, a black and a red smoke, and then if you were to pick something else in between, like maybe like a light one, maybe?
Well, yeah, because that would provide contrast.
So then you'd have
contrast.
Black, red, and something lighter, like maybe a yellow.
Yeah. And for me, all I would be seeing is like a dark, a kind of little bit lighter, and a really light, you know?
And I think the thing we're taking away from this here is that you can of course manage for color blindness, but at the same time, you also need to manage for people like yourself who, I forget which is which. Is it the cones or the rods that do contrast?
I think it's the. Gosh, I think cones are color, I believe.
So, you also need to manage contrast in addition to color. And when it comes to accessibility in general, if you handle both contrast, if you can have, you know, differences in contrast and difference in color that are color blindness accessible, that's probably just a good general guideline to take if you were to do such a thing, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's and you see this nowadays. A lot of games will have an accessibility settings in their menus, and you will see there will be usually there's three different color blindness settings, and I couldn't give you what those exact terms are, but they refer to like the red and brown colorblind, the blue and green, you know, or blue and yellow. There's a couple of them, but what I'm saying is, it doesn't matter what kind of color blindness you have if you attack it using contrast, which also opens it up for every other person with a visual impairment.
Oh, so you're saying you can attack color blindness by also just you dealing with contrast.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And then what you would have on the top level then, for example, would just be different color blindness options that would affect the game as it was. But we, of course, know how big RS is, and this was asked about at some point, if they could do this in applying a game-wide color blindness option. They said it would actually be quite difficult. But I get it. And, you know, I think the thing we need to take away from this is that these are positive steps in the right direction, yes?
Very positive. Like I said, even for though like it kind of misses the mark for me, I'm really happy at the steps that have been taken.
And this will probably help some people out there that don't have the contrast issues that you have, I'd bet.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm being completely honest, I think it's going to be a little bit less effective than what they're hoping for. But I'm very appreciative that they tried. And maybe, you know, maybe we just change up some colors again in the future.
All right.
Yeah.
Sounds good. All righty. Next up, we're going to talk about some God Banter from November 1st. And I was actually pleased to see this happening. I didn't know with the final front out if we were going to have God Banter this week. And lo and behold, we do.
And I have something to hold us over till the quest.
Right? Yeah. I mean, we're assuming it's going to be a quest.
I just did that to get you going, Shane.
Yeah. we thought Battle of the Monolith was going to be a quest, but of course that wasn't. So anyways, this discussion begins with Zamorak, Armadyl, and Sarah Doman discussing Zook. And it goes in a very interesting direction. Zamorak says, presumably there's a reason I haven't heard of him before now. Armadyl says he's been around since the God Wars, and perhaps you should have been paying more attention. And this really shows the stress that's happening in this cathedral, Zamorak says, and I quote, "Do not patronize me, bird. I made it my business to know what was going on during that time." Do not patronize me, bird. No, that was Zamorak that said that.
Well, but Armadillo was sassy
right.
before.
Okay, fair enough. Sarah Doman says, "I'll tell you, peace. I see no reason to hide it now." Zook emerged unheralded from a fissure in Feldapils. We, of course, knew this from the cutscene. And Sarah Doman says that he received word of him from the monks at Entrena, who began taking refugees fleeing on ships. Armadillo says that Zook was a tremendous threat with unknown potential and a clear propensity for chaos, so he had to be neutralized quickly and discreetly to ensure that you and he would not establish an alliance, talking, of course, about Zamorak and Zook. So, Zamorak says, "So all your noise and aggressive military offensive at the time." Armadillo says, "A concerted military smokescreen ensuring you were not aware of Zook's emergence." Zamorak says, "I remember now. Suddenly, I found myself facing your full forces. How did you also tackle Zook?" Armadillo says, "We were also contending with Bandos at the time. Not the threat you were, but a thorn in our side, nonetheless. Zook emerged in Bandosian lands, from which Bandos found himself cut off by our forces. We arranged a ceasefire, allowed Bandos safe passage to Yunil if he agreed to face Zook in battle." And of course, this is what we hear in the cutscene after you've killed Zook for the first time, that Zook says he hasn't been defeated since Bandos. Sarah Doman then continues, "Buoyed by the promise of a simple contest of strength, one he could understand, Bandos was easy to convince, and for us it was a win-win situation. Either way, a foe had been dealt with, and another weekend." Weekend. Sorry, not weekend. It's the weekend very soon, though, here. Zamorak says, "So, what happened? Do not keep me in suspense now." Sarah Doman continues, "Our spies watched from a distance as the two giants clashed. Zook matched Bandos for physical power, but Bandos was wilier. The battle raged for days until finally Bandos backed Zook into a ravine. With a taunt, Bandos provoked Zook to charge recklessly. Parrying Zook's blow, Bandos kicked him onto his back. Then, at Bandos' command, hidden geomancers collapsed vast quantities of rock onto Zook." Armadillo says, "Although grievously wounded, Zook laughed as Bandos dug him out. He boasted that he would return and next time he would win. So, Bandos dragged Zook's broken body down deep into the earth, all the way back to the kiln. He used ensorcelled chains that continually constricted Zook's limbs, crushing them as the kiln restored them. Bandos' cruel laughter echoed throughout the caverns as he left his shattered foe there to languish forever in agony and defeat." Now, Saren says, "Had Bandos realized what the kiln truly was, he might have become something altogether more dangerous, and that area was close to populous territories. What if they joined forces and embarked upon a rampage? I am appalled, honestly, that you would resort to such a reckless strategy." Zamorak says, "I, on the other hand, am impressed, if surprised, at your ruthlessness. Perhaps you'll think twice before leveling accusations at me from now on." Sarah Doman says, "I regret what happened to Zook and endangering people from southern Kandarin, but we calculated the risk and took the best option we had. We did what had to be done." And then Saren closes off with that, "I suppose I have some sympathy." So we're in a situation here where...
familiar situation.
Where Bandos almost found the Elder Kiln. And that would have completely changed the trajectory of the God Wars back then.
But no indication, even if he had found it, he would have known its significance. He
would have known what it was, did. Right.
Yeah.
And it really raises up that prospect of what an alternate history of this could look like. In terms of the Third Age God Wars, that is. Obviously now Armadillo, Saradon, and Zamorak are having a chat about this in terms of how Bandos defeated him the first time. But it really raises the question of, I think, just what was Bandos? And, you know, people always gave him the tagline of the big high war god and whatnot. But was he just so concerned and focused on fighting that he didn't investigate or have followers around to investigate the area around the kiln, I wonder?
Well, I mean, they are goblins. I mean, how smart are these things?
You're right. You're right. I feel like that's an incredibly racist comment to say, but goblins are not portrayed as the smartest tool in the shed, right?
No. Well, don't believe so.
So, but as we see it here, this week's God Banter not really focusing on what's happening in the future. It's a bit of a look back at what happened at the previous week, and we'll have to see if they continue this look back into things we've seen as we head into the 8th, or if they're going to be talking about something else that might be happening going forward, because obviously time's ticking, because we're all wondering what happens next now, aren't we? So, Okay. So, we're going to have a talk here, and it's a patch note week, and, you know, sometimes we like to work some of our own discussions in to these patch notes weeks, and this one needed to happen, I think, because I've been seeing a lot of this talk in just clan chat in general, in RuneScape public chat as well, and it's a question about what exactly is happening with the GE in terms of prices and inflation. I know you and I had a bit of a brief look at some of the items before we began here. Do you feel anything in the economy right now in RS?
I honestly didn't think there was an issue. I'm a little more apt to listening now that you pulled a few items.
Yeah.
And we did a year to year comparison, yeah. But,
All right. So we're going to go through a few things here, and we're not going to go too deep into the economics of it, because that would be a whole monthly bit on itself, and I don't have the information to answer the questions authoritatively on this. So the first question is, what is inflation? And put simply, inflation is when the prices of things increase over time in an economy. And alongside that comes the decrease in purchasing power of an individual with the money that they hold. In the real world, that's your cash and your yearly salary. But in game, it's the amount of GP that you have in your coin pouch. So when inflation happens, it effectively is devaluing the GP that you hold. Because if I hold 100 million GP, if I had 100 million GP in 2005, that 100 million GP is not going to go as far as today as it would have done in 2005. Now, granted, that's an extreme example because inflation happens year over year, time over time. Sometimes it goes up, sometimes it goes down. And because the economy of RuneScape is, in effect, regulated by the updates Jagex puts out, by the double XP lives that happen every 4 months, by the amount of consumption that happens in the economy, it's not something that happens as it does in real life. So there are parallels, but there are things as well that certainly don't apply on that. What we also need to have a discussion about is whether or not there's a huge amount of gold, GP, just sitting somewhere in people's banks, sitting in, held up in grand exchange purchases that aren't being ticked over. And that's called our money supply. And if that amount of money supply is increasing over time, that will inherently increase inflation. This can, of course, come from Slayer tasks. This can come from mobs that drop trash that just winds up being alchemized. And this is all leading to our next question, which I'll answer the first question first. What causes inflation? What causes inflation is when we have this excess amount of money that is brought into the game. And there's numerous ways you can cause inflation to tick up. One of the first ways that you can create inflation is an increase in demand. We're seeing this in the real world right now with an increase in demand coming out the other side of the COVID pandemic. The other one is the cost on raw resources. If the cost of something is going to go up, if, for example, you're building a house and the cost of timber goes up, that's going to create inflation in your economy. With this, the same thing goes in RS. If there's a huge sudden increase in demand for, say, a certain type of potion or a certain type of food, that general pull on the economy to move this amount of GP and cycle it through is also going to increase inflation. So that's the two main ways. There's another way that refers to the general idea of things getting more expensive over time, but that doesn't necessarily apply as well to RS. But the next question that everybody wants to have an answer to is, does inflation exist currently in RuneScape 3? And, you know, the answer to this one is a hard question to answer. Tanis, if you had to guess, which side would you come down on? Yes or no, after what we've looked at here?
Coming into it, I didn't think I would have said no. Going out of it, I would say yes, but the reasons are still undetermined because we don't know cash flow.
Exactly. And to get an accurate picture of what the inflation of an economy looks like, you need to have a look at cash flow. You need to know how much money is coming into the game monthly, weekly, yearly, the whole shebang. At the same time, you need to know the amount of money that's going out of the economy. Where is this money being sunk? Is it being sunk into death costs? Is it being sunk somewhere else? Is there money being generated from people money laundering at the dual arena? That's another important question to ask. And without knowing the answers to these questions, the only way you know the answers to these questions is if you're Mod Timbo and you have this data at hand. If you don't know the answer to these questions, you really cannot answer the question. And I'll just rephrase this. Day-to-day players cannot answer the question of, is the inflation we are currently experiencing, if we are experiencing inflation in RuneScape 3, is that inflation a problem? An ordinary player cannot answer that question without knowing what the money supply looks like and what the cash flow in and out of all the various areas of the game's economy looks like. And that's the point number one that I want everybody to take home from this, is for people who say that there's a huge inflation problem and we need more money sinks, stop. We don't know that because we don't have all the information that's available to us. If you had all that information, you could start an analysis on it. But players like you, me, Tanis, and everybody else, we don't have that information. So we don't know. It's as simple as that. And what? I'm gonna say something that might actually make PVMers upset with this. We might actually need to increase death costs.
Oh, well, everyone wants that to go the opposite way.
If everybody PVMs, and that's where most of the money is going out, a really short-term fix, if inflation was a problem and there was too much money in the economy, increase death costs by 10%. That would be one area to do it. We're going to talk about the old school.
I mean, you have to determine where that is, because
right.
it's probably not the regular PVMer or skiller or any player for
right,
that matter.
And I just want to make it clear that that's an example I pulled out. I'm not saying that's what it is. I'm just saying that if you looked at the analysis and it said that, oh, most of the money is going out of game through PVM right now, gee, this would be a very efficient money sink, it would be very hard to argue to not increase death costs with that.
Well, I want people to remember that party hats and rares are not a good indication of inflation. Those things fluctuate, and it's more akin to a collector's market. And collector's markets go up and down and all kinds of crazy stuff. If you want to look for inflation, you got to look just like we did for the regular, and everyday used items.
And in the real world, we call this the consumer price index. A basket of items that everybody purchases is going to be purchasing, you know, every month. And how that goes month to month, year to year in the real world is a measure of inflation. Another very common way of doing this is the Big Mac index. How much does it cost to buy a Big Mac from McDonald's? That's another fun one. Because not only can you measure it over time throughout, say, one country, but you can also go today, compare the U.S. and compare, say, France, do that same Big Mac index, account for currency differences, and you can see the difference in cost between the two countries. So that's the Big Mac index. And granted, we can't do that same sort of thing in RS, but just because you think you might be... What?
I was just thinking we should do that, and then we could let McDonald's know how much it would cost them for their employees to have health care and paid leave and all the stuff that they get in all the other countries.
Oh, that's hilarious. But where was I? You can't look for inflation in the party hats, like you mentioned, in the rare market. You can, of course, you know, see how much GP is being used. If somebody buys a party hat, that can be an indication. But like you said, collector's markets are not necessarily the best place to look for inflation on that. Kind of similar to how the stock market is not a good place to look for inflation in the real world. I think the last point I want to make about RuneScape 3 inflation before we tackle two of the other fixes that people have been clamoring for is that we just need to say that whatever the end result of Timbo and the Economist is, whether there needs to be more GP sinks or not, that's something that's going to need to be shared with the community at the end of the day. And based on what I have seen personally, I'm a little bit concerned about whether or not people are actually going to get the death cost rework that they want.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think that's information that we will ever
know.
I mean, it takes a long time just to get, look how long it takes to get drop tables sometimes.
Yeah. That's why I just want to caution everybody about jumping to conclusions about we need a death rework in terms of costs. We need something to deal with inflation. We need X, we need Y. Inflation is caused by, you know, whichever update might be added to the game. And the short answer is that we as players just have no idea, and making certain suggestions about the economy without having that information really doesn't help anyone. And anybody who makes such suggestions, hence I'm not making any here, really is just wasting everybody's time at the end of the day. So
there.
Now, another thing that comes up, and we're just going to talk about how people get around the marker to buy things like the Zook sword, which was 5.4 bill on first week. And that's, of course, the spirit shards from the summoning store. You can buy them for 25 GP each from the store, and you can sell them back to the store for 25 GP each. So it's a one-to-one trade. You just buy some shards, and there's extra money right there, and you can use those. And those are commonly used in trades that are beyond the GE price or the item price limit of 2.1 billion. So what's the difference between, say, a shard and the platinum coins that they have in old school? And the answer to that question is that there really is no difference. They accomplish the same thing at the end of the day. Spirit shards are a little bit more difficult to work with because you have to go through the summoning store interface, and you can't just, you know, put up a stack of 20 million shards on the exchange and use those to buy something. So there's that intermediary step that you need to convert with. And it's effectively the same. It's just an extra kludge in the way of that. And because of that, the question that next always comes up is that, why don't we just add platinum coins to the game so that you can just, you know, purchase with the platinum coins like they do on old school? Well, the answer to that is that if we are indeed experiencing an inflation problem in RuneScape, the platinum coins will just make the problem worse. because it will, in effect, normalize the prices that we're seeing. And granted, you can say they're already normalized within shards, but this would be Jagex effectively saying, okay, these prices are high. They're here to stay. We're just going to have to deal with it at the end of the day. So for me personally, I would prefer not to see something like the platinum coins come in, and I would like to see the core health of the economy addressed before anything else on that happens. And in terms of the idea that platinum coins will reduce inflation, all the platinum coins will do is hide the inflation behind the platinum coins. And we heard the same thing happen or be suggested a number of times in the real world when the U.S. was approaching the debt ceiling. Why doesn't the U.S. just mint a $1 trillion coin and mint a few of those and get rid of the problem? And the idea behind that is it, in effect, just wipes it away, and it would be, in effect, a fresh start, and it doesn't really address the health of the economy. There's reasons to believe, and the economic research is still out on this, because by all accounts in the real world, we should have seen some major economic side effects following the 2009 era recession in the real world that would have said that, in effect, just printing so much money in order to solve the market bailouts that happened, we should have been seeing problems like that. So there's lots of questions out there in modern economic science as to why that didn't happen. And there's some interesting discussion happening about that that relates to economies that are commodity, or sorry, that aren't, that have currencies that are based off physical assets, like has been the case in the past with the US. But of course, we're venturing off the path here of RuneScape.
Yeah, you're about to venture into verifying MMT there, Shane.
Yeah. And the point here at the end of the day is that when it comes to the platinum coins in old school versus RuneScape 3, it would just be an admission that these prices are here to stay and this is just going to be the way it needs to be. But once again, it's better to address this from a whole of economy perspective and get a picture of what everything looks like. And if that means bringing in a platinum coin, do it. But at the same time, you need to make sure it's a whole of economy solution. And that's why, you know, just bringing these in with one update really wouldn't fix anything that we're seeing right now, because it's basically the same thing as spirit shards. So do you have any questions?
No, I think that was a pretty good explanation.
Yeah.
And like I said, I started off not really thinking there was probably very much inflation, but there's some. There's definitely some, and it would be best to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, and that's exactly the thing. Bringing in the platinum coins won't get to the bottom of it, and it will just exacerbate the problem, because at some point, if nothing else were to change and everything else were to be held constant, you'd be at a stage where you're running out of platinum coins, hypothetically. So it's better to address the whole of economy problem. And summing it up, there's really no difference between that and the spirit shards. We're already using them, so that's why stacking it on really wouldn't be a healthy thing to do. We likely do have some inflation in RuneScape 3 in terms of where it sits and what parts of the economy it's in. That is something we can only tell with access to the full cash flow and where the money is sitting in the game, which we don't have. And in general, inflation can be caused by costs of items going up or increased demand in a certain sector. And inflation, just winding it back to the complete beginning, is the act of a person with a set amount of gold that they hold, GP or cash in real life, of losing purchasing power. So if you feel like that's been happening to you in RuneScape, if you had 100 mil and you can't do what you want to do with it, that's likely something to do with inflation.
I remember back in my day when 40 mil was 40 mil.
I remember when 400K was a lot.
Well, that I don't remember, but I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to thank some Patreon supporters. Then we're going to talk about taxes. One of my favorite subjects. So this week, I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvids L., Christian S., Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plocks, Diana, Drama Free, Duramax, L.O. Matey, Free Milk, Guy Lafleur, Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Jim M., Keski, Kevin G., Lucky Ducky, Malinoric, Nate the Great, Renhawk, Ricky A., Rippeth, Samuel F.L., Scott D.S., Seth W., Singer, Stub Eve, Tanner, J.W., The Bears O.P., The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., and Zant. Thank you all of you for your support. It truly means the world to us. And if you're wondering what all this is about, check us out at patreon.com/rsbnb. We're working up to the $200 Patreon mailout where patrons will receive a special limited edition postcard that's currently being crafted. But of course, if you just want the tangible benefits of more shows, you can do that as well. For as little as $1 a month, you gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits going back over 2 years now, almost 3 years at this point. Lots of fun topics. We're currently working on one on revitalizing PvP. We hope to have that to you by the end of next week. And we also do have a VIP tier for $3 a month where you can get access to high-quality stereo versions of the podcast and a mention at the start of the month. And for $5 a month, you gain a shout-out each and every week on the show and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. And of course, should we ever reach that absurd limit of $500 a month, Tannis and I will hurt our throats with the Hot Ones Challenge. I bet you're just looking forward to that, aren't you?
Oh, I can't wait. I think we'll be hurting our throats and everything else all the way through.
Yeah. We got to find some victims for that, don't we?
We definitely need more victims, yes.
Yeah. If you want to help us with that, check us out at patreon.com/rsbnb, or if you just want to support the podcast, we'd very much appreciate it. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thanks.
All right, so this one's from the RR Man. Old school is considering a grand exchange tax system. In what ways is this good and bad for the economy, and if it came in, would you like to see it in RS3 as well as a needed gold sink? Cheers. And once again, we don't know if we need a gold sink. That's only something that they can tell internally, that the economists can tell by looking at the cash flow and where the gold is sitting currently in the game. So let's not jump down that idea that we need a gold sink. But we're starting to see some ramifications here of the economy and how that's working in old school. And they've brought together a number of suggestions for this. And one of them is a seller's tax on the grand exchange of 2% that would be removed from the final sale value. So the buyer would still pay the same, but the tax will be passed on to the seller. And in the case of multiple stacks, the tax would be applied per item sold rather than total received. And it says the GE would also be updated to clearly show how much tax the seller would have to pay if their sale is successful. Okay.
Come on, let us have it, Grover.
So, who are you talking about? Grover Cleveland?
Norkerwitz, or whatever his name is. The no taxes guy. He's been preaching the same thing since the 80s.
I have no idea who that is. But anyway.
Really?
No.
Wow. Okay.
So, this is an effective way to sink money out of the economy. We need to be 100% clear in that. The money is just going to go poof. It's going to be gone. It's very effective. 2% is seemingly the value that the economists have put on it. And, you know, I'm going to believe what they're saying in this because it's not something that is like real life where it's going to be necessarily tortured with political spin for that sake. My problem with this is that it puts the tax on the seller instead of the buyer.
Whoa.
And with that,
exact opposite. Wow.
And with that, it will, and this is because I see merchanting and in general manipulation of the economy as something that falls normally to the people who are selling. And my concern, and I would like to see some data on this, is that, granted, you know, 2% isn't that much. It's not. But if you're doing enough stacks, if you're doing enough trades, it's going to add up over time. And it's going to force people to go back to trading person to person. And you're not going to have that sink. At least on the merchanter's side. And I can see the logic of, you know, putting it on the seller because the buyer shouldn't have to pay an extra 2% on whatever, right? I can see that logic and I understand it.
But well, I think, because it's a regressive tax, Shane.
And
merchanters are the ones making, they're doing it for profit so they can pay the tax.
Right, but do you want them to pay the tax or do you want them to go underground with their merching? Or rather, do you want the money to be sunk out of the economy, or do you want the people to go underground?
If the money needs to come out of the economy, then if you're going to institute a tax, then I think it's best to have the tax on the seller rather than the buyer, because the buyer is a regressive tax.
And that's a fair statement to make, but depending what kind of scales we're looking at, you could see probably, maybe, and I don't like using those words because they're words that indicate a wobbly foundation, but one of the potential things that could happen with this is you could see amounts of items disappear from the GE, undermining its effectiveness.
You don't know much about the underground commodities market, huh, Shane?
In RS or otherwise?
Yeah. No, RS.
No, I don't.
Okay. This is that already happens. Especially about around these times. It's all to do with buy limits, right?
Yeah.
So this already happens to get around buy limits. And the people that do it, we're talking the quantities that they need. It's already happening. I can't see it. They already exist. So I can't see a bunch of things going underground more so than already is.
Right. And if things are going to go underground or have been going underground, what's to say that just won't accelerate?
Well, I'm not too sure that they're not going to want people coming in muscling into their markets. And they have the purchasing power to do something about it. They could undercut whatever new person comes in if they wanted to. These people don't work alone.
Yeah, I know their entire cartel's associated with it. And yeah. I'm sure they exist on RS3.
No, they do. I'm telling you, right? Like, I'm telling you, they do, Shane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in some ways, because of that, I just don't think, and maybe it's the way I view the entire macroeconomic system, but I don't see people going along with this who would have been using the GE to make a profit before. Because I know that can be done. And I'm not talking necessarily about it, you know, pushing your average skiller away from the GE. I'm not talking about those people.
A 2% tax? 2%?
100 mil. 2% on 100 mil.
Mm-hmm.
2 mil.
Mm-hmm.
Do 10
that
trades.
That sounds reasonable.
Do 10 trades, that's 10 mil gone.
Yeah, and after 10, and what do you have in your pocket? 990?
Yeah, and it adds
million?
Up over time. It's a game
is
of pennies.
It for the health of, but is it for the health of the economy or not? Like, who should be sacrificing? If it's for the health of the economy, who should make that sacrifice? I'm saying it's the person that can that gets 990 mil out of it versus the guy that's just trying to buy some supplies to get through double XP.
And see, that's a such an interesting point, because when you put it in that lens, it's a no-brainer to put it on the seller. But the question I have still stands is that, are there enough people who would move away with the seller's tax on the GE that it could lower the amount of certain items on the GE? That's my main concern in primary. It's not the fact that someone's going to lose 10 mil on a billion in sales.
Well, see, I don't think so, because people, you know, you hear it every day, right? Oh, my taxes go up, I'm moving.
Or 500 mil in sales, sorry.
No one ever.
People don't do that.
And I see the same thing here. I really think if you're a Frisky player, you're going to keep playing. I really can't see that being the thing that just you're like, no, that's a bridge too far. It's damn 2% tax.
Well, I know for me personally, if I was selling huge stacks of items and this was a thing in my game, I would go sell them. I'd go sell them by hand, but that's just me.
Well, that's another question, you know, but for right now, I mean, it's about where the tax should go.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, we need to be 100% clear that it is a good GP sync. And I think that's what everybody needs to take away from it. But once again, did we ever think we'd be in this kind of position here? That we would need to be considering this? Because, I mean, overall, yeah, you can make the argument that it's good for the economy, answering the question that the RR man posted. I don't want to see it in RS3, but if we need it, we can. I'm going to leave that up to the economists to decide. I would prefer it be on the buyer's end myself.
See, I think the trouble is it's because it's a tax, right? Like, you don't like the word tax. And it's even worse because, like, you know, everyone else in the world, you Canadians and stuff, you people in UK, you're all used to getting something when you pay your taxes, right? So us Americans, we don't get shit basically for our taxes. So this would be really similar to what we're already used to. So it's only a shocker for you guys, Shane.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, we're already used to the government taking our money and not getting anything in return.
All right. Yeah. Let's look at the other portions of the doc here. They talk about an item sync. The GE sales tax helps reduce the amount of gold in game. It doesn't reduce the number of items available. Old school generates its prestigious items from loot through bosses or raiding dungeons. And the rate of these depends on the number of people playing the content, and many of the encounters are instants, meaning the number of players is unlimited. This can lead to more items coming into the game via drops than there are actual players who use them. Old school has almost no mechanisms for which items may be removed from the game, and that's a key difference there. With RS3, we have invention.
Mm-hmm.
Some items have very specific circumstances that delete them, like the Abyssal Tentacle, which consumes whips. That's an interesting sounding item name.
And old school artificing is born.
Yeah, but that got voted down.
Well, they're going to get it because they need to do something. They obviously need invention.
They said we can use items as payment for in-game fees. For example, Death's Coffer allows player to sacrifice any tradable item worth more than 10,000 coins, adding their value plus 5% into a coffer that can pay down certain in-game fees. This can work for any item in theory, but the fees in the game are so low that players need to never sacrifice many high-end items. So with the introduction of the GE tax, there's a huge opportunity to introduce effective and scalable item sinks. How are they going to do that? Well, they could use the tax collected from the GE sales to purchase items from other players with the simple intention of deleting said items once the purchase is complete. Essentially, rather than just deleting the coins that are taxed, we can spend them buying off items from other players and delete those items. This doesn't need to be the case for every item in the game, of course. We'd have the flexibility to pick and choose.
Brilliant. I'm all for a controlled, planned economy. That's fine with me. You're probably, like, this probably is appalling to you, isn't it, Shane?
How did you know?
I just know you.
What I'm wondering is exactly how does invention work on RS3, and is invention enough of an item sink for our game?
Well, I think so, but we can always add, right, to invention.
Yeah.
And we can make new uses.
Any
for
item
new
is
items.
Disassemblable.
Yeah.
And I mean, hey, if you want to, you know, make something really worth a lot, all you do is you make it, you know, have a special component about it that makes some of the best jewelry in game. I'm looking at you, Fortunate Components. Mm-hmm. And there's your economy of clue scroll items, which I think is probably pretty healthy.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we have our planned economy too. It's just
and to be fair, we're not talking about the real world here. So I'm not as knee-jerk opposed to it as you would think. And even with the Grand Exchange sales tax, I could be convinced to put it on the seller's end if I saw the economic data behind it.
Well, there you go, Shane. Unfortunately, you'll probably never.
Yeah. But you know, given time, I think we could probably derive some of it. It's just I haven't had the time to do that since this post came out relatively recently.
Well, we'll find out if it were to work, then they'll come out in 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
Show us the data. And,
yeah.
You know, or kind of, you know, like stripped down versions of it anyway.
So looking at this through the entire picture here, when a tax trade takes place through the GE, they'd allocate an amount of wealth from those taxes to a virtual coffer. This coffer would then be used to fund the purchase of that specific items that has been chosen by Jagex, and based on the estimated quantity entering the game per day and the amount they'd like to see it reduced. So, this is what would happen when a player would create a sell offer on an applicable item. If the virtual coffer's funds are below a specific item's value, we do not interfere because we can't afford to buy that item. The player sell offer would be created normally on the GE. If we've already removed the required amount of items for the day, we do not interfere because we don't want to create supply issues. If the virtual coffer has enough funds and the number of items to be removed for the day hasn't yet hit its limit, then instead of creating a sell offer, they delete the item and immediately pay the player a number of coins minus the Grand Exchange tax. So when you sell something on the GE with this, it might not necessarily be going to someone else. It might just be being deleted.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's the ultimate item sink. I'm cool with that.
And the interesting part about this is that taken on its own, the tax on the seller really doesn't make much sense to me. But taken with this, it makes 100% sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So I can come around to this then. And I'm going to be watching out there. I'm going to be watching out there for people in the comments who listen to that first segment and tell me I'm wrong and didn't read the post. We got there in the end. We're doing this together.
That's right.
Because, you know, there's always that person out there, right, who hears something and then it's addressed later in the show.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that's like the guy at work that reads the first line of the email, but fails to read the other 3 points that you put in it, you know?
Yeah.
Addresses the first line. Oh, that's great. Could you maybe answer the other 2 questions? Okay, thank you.
Here's items that they're thinking that could be added to the GE tax item sync. Spectral and arcane shields, nightmare staves and orbs, the twisted bow, elder maul, Kodai insignia, Din's bulwark, player reward scrolls, god swords, armadillo armor, bandos armor, ceridoman sword, zamorakian spear, abyssal bludgeon, the kraken tentacle and trident, the dark bow, smoke battle staff, occult necklace, and toxic blowpipe. This list is not final and is subject to change.
Okay, fine. You're starting with the high-end stuff, but keep an eye on everything.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Like, you know what I mean?
You have
like,
a full list here, but these would definitely be the highest impact ones.
Right, but it's not a high impact for people that aren't using that kind of thing. Like,
true.
If people that are using potions, their prices are just going to end up going up, you know? So, like, I want it to be like not just high end items. Like wherever a problem pops up, wherever the price is, you know, going up beyond what it normally should.
Yeah.
Whatever its CPI normally is.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and then you know what else they have? There's going to be a poll question. Should you be allowed to purchase additional bank space with coins? 40 bank space for each increment, starting off at 1 million, going up to 2, then 5, then 10, then 20, then 50, then 100, then 200, then 500. 9 extra blocks of bank space, taking it from 840 to 1160 for members, for a grand total of 888 million.
That's a lot of money in old school, huh?
Yeah, that is a lot of money in old school.
I mean, I think the price is too high, but yeah, I think it's...
Well, this is another sync for 320 items slots in your bank.
But honestly, do you want to use a potential monetization method as a gold sync? Well, you can make good money off that bank space.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying. I'd pay for bank space.
Would you rather pay 888 mil, or would you rather just, you know, pop, you know, 9 bonds on it?
I'd rather pay real money, but that's because I'd never have 800 and some mil GP.
Yeah. All right. They're also doing a literal gold sink for people who want to show off their wealth in their player-owned house. Should it be possible to create a gold sink that is mountable in your player-owned house? The golden sink would require 47 construction to create and would require 10 condensed gold, 5 gold leaves, and 5 mahogany planks. Condensed gold would be added to the Keldergrim Stonemason shop, costing 10 million coins each.
That I love.
It would cost 100 mil to mount.
I love that. I mean... That's what it's all about. People just want to show off anyway, right?
Yeah.
I mean, give the house some love.
This is going to be something that would be so hard for them to do. But the best RS3 gold sink would be a construction rework.
Mm-hmm. That you could you know, like, improve the things in your house, like, by adding. Yeah. Oh, God. Yes. Please.
Or you could just go get a gold sink in old school.
Mm-hmm. I do that too.
Oh, I'm talking about you in particular.
Oh, well. Yeah. Old school. If they ever get our quality of life, not out of the question, but.
For comparison's sake, this gold sink costs 100.1 mil. The Crystal Throne is 14.7, Demonic Throne is 24.5 mil, Most Gilded Furniture is 200k, and Marble Furniture is 400k.
Well, Boy, it seemed like I paid so much more for that demonic throne than that.
But the prices would be the same, but it was a long time ago, so.
Yeah.
You know, overall, I came into this thinking that, you know, putting the grand exchange tax on the seller was a bad thing. But when you take this and, I'm going to use the word, you do the whole of economy approach, everything in this post from top to bottom makes sense.
I think it was, you know, pretty well thought out. And, you know, I don't know. I wonder who does their economy balancing over there at school.
Yeah, I don't know who the equivalent of Timbo is, but I know they have economists working within the realm of both games. So, there's that. All right, I don't think I have anything else to say on that. And see, folks, this is why it's so important that you have an open mind.
Absolutely.
All right, let's move on to pick of the week. What's your pick of the week?
My pick of the week, so for everybody out there that likes racing games, there's a big one coming out tomorrow. It's going to hit Xbox Game Pass, so if you have that.
It's actually coming out on the 9th, apparently?
What?
Yeah, it says available November 9th.
On Game Pass?
Yeah.
Dude, I thought it was the 5th.
Well, it's only four days away.
4 days away.
Or it is the 5th.
Yeah, I swear it was the 5th.
Interesting. So why does it say available November 9th, 2021?
I don't know, but I was sure it was the 5th because you could do the pre-download on Game Pass, which I did.
All right.
Yeah, so, but you know, that comes with it. I assume this is going to be just as good as its predecessors. The Forza games are awesome games. They're also probably the most accessible driving game I played. They have a lot of really, 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 really cool features, from GPS to you know, different assists and things like that. And I cannot wait to play it. I'm looking so forward to, getting in there, doing some racing. First thing I always do is buy every old car that I can. I got to get old American muscle. That's my thing. I don't know. I don't know about the controversy you dug up there, Shane. I was under the understanding that it comes out tomorrow.
But, yeah. And, oh, it's early access on the 5th, releases on the 9th. So it means that anybody who wants to can play it on the 5th, but the actual release date is the 9th. Okay, that makes sense. That's a controversy.
Okay.
And, you know, I prefer Horizon over Motorsport just because Horizon is the open world and there's so many more diverse locales to it.
Yeah, and there's so much, you know, you've got your stunt things, your challenges, your barns, finds, and it's just so much with the Forza games. I mean, what was the Forza 4 where you're racing through the woods against the dirt bikes and stuff, or you'll be racing against a jet. It's so fun.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes it's just about being as simple as racing, and I know one of the things people really like about this is the customizability of it too, with the cars and whatnot.
Yeah, so. Yeah, that is. I mean, that is cool. Of course, you know, the first thing I do is usually get a Dodge Charger and put an 01 on the side of it, because of course I do.
This was set in Mexico, so you won't be driving in on the other side of the road like the last one.
I know. I'm so looking forward to that because that really messed me up. Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, that's a good pick of the week. I know these games always look wonderful. Apparently, on the Series X, you'll be able to run it in 4K 60. That would be a sight to be seen on any kind of TV out there. I still run 1080p on my computer, and that's where I'll be playing it. You're gonna run it on the new Xbox that you have, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But the funny thing is, it'll be running on that, but I'll probably spend a considerable amount of time having it streamed to my computer monitor.
Right.
So, yeah.
Just easier to see vision-wise, I bet, right?
Well, and my monitor's in the office, and that's where I spend most of yeah.
Got it. All right. My pick of the week isn't something I'm going out there to necessarily tell you to buy, but it's the pick of the week from a pure technological perspective. And I wanted to talk about these last week, but we were full up on picks of the week. And Apple has done it again. They brought forward unveiled new MacBook Pro laptops, and you know they brought back a number of features like the SD card reader and the HDMI port and MagSafe power port. But these are also the first laptops on their in-house built and designed hardware, the Apple Silicon chips, in particularly, and so that we're talking about chips that have up to a 10-core CPU and up to 32-core GPUs. Now, I'm not going to go into the entire technical behind this because that would bore probably all but two listeners out there on this. But effectively what these computers are is imagine the best iPad you have ever used and take it up a whole bunch of levels in terms of performance, in terms of having that same level of hardware, software, integration for video support and just in general doing things so fast when it comes to say video encoding or compiling software. Even there's been lots of discussion done on that kind of benchmark with this, but the thing that really floored me when I saw this, take a guess what kind of laptop GPU Apple is competing with here, Tanis.
AMD?
No. These new MacBook Pros have GPUs that compete with the NVIDIA Mobile RTX 3080. The mobile version of the 3080.
I wonder how they're going to manage doing that.
And they do it for about a third the power.
Are they using things that they can get a hold of, actually? Because...
Well, yeah, they design it all themselves internally.
GPUs are not easy to even...
Yeah, no, these are Apple-built GPUs, Apple-built CPUs, all in one package. And they're competing with the highest of, you know, laptop GPUs, which is absolutely astounding. And this should make a lot of people worried. For what it's going to look like when they do the exact same thing on the desktop and compete with a desktop GPU.
Right.
So, we're in the middle of what is probably going to mount up to being a paradigm shift in terms of how we look at laptops.
But this isn't like that kind of... kind of a media stunt where it was, you know, $50,000 for the laptop.
No. These are regular Mac laptop prices. In fact, cheaper than the previous 16-inch MacBook Pro. A little bit. So things are changing. If you're looking for a mobile video editing platform, this is probably where you want to be. So I'll just leave it at that, but the interesting nature of it also just comes from the fact that these are their own custom design chips, and everything from the GPU to the memory to the storage, all of it is on one entire chip, and that's how they're able to achieve such high performance with that. So, really interesting stuff. And I should also note that the thing that people have to give up if they get any of these modern Mac laptops is that they are no longer upgradable in terms of memory or storage or anything to that effect. So you win some, you lose some.
I wonder how's the storage look like? It's a decent.
They start with 512 gig SSDs.
Ooh. Ooh, that's a pretty big drawback.
Yeah. The high-end one starts with a terabyte.
That's not what it used to be, though.
No, it's not. But for what it's worth, both my main operating system drives on my Mac and my Windows computer are 500 gig, so I get by with it.
Wow. Do not know how.
I have lots of other hard drives attached.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Anyways, let's do some achievements.
All right, and starting off on November 3rd, we have Vapor13579 with 99 ranged. Then we have Jumpy Ninja on the 2nd with 99 attack. We have LLOL Monster with 99 Dungeoneering on the 2nd. Vapor13579 again with 99 Defense on the 2nd. And Lady Claw with 120 Mining on November 1st.
Nicely done. Moving on to the 31st, Halloween, we have iBattleslash with 99 Hunter. Wildly Fallen with 99 Archaeology, Vapor13579 with 99 Construction, Xerxes with 120 Ranged, Gooey Cookie with 99 Mining, and Vapor13579 again with 99 Agility. All right, what have you been up to on RS?
So I've been doing the wood cutting, but the last couple days I went and got some energy, preparing porters for double XP. I'm going to do mining again, so need to have lots and lots of porters. That's been about it.
Okay, fair enough. Incandescent, I bet?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. As for me, last weekend I utilized the rest of Free Death Week. I got the 3 Zook kills that I wasn't able to get prior to the show, and by the time we were done this thing, I think I managed to kill him 6 or 7 times, and I got 3 Igneous Stones out of it. So I got all 3 capes by the end of the Free Death Weekend.
Nice.
And with that, I also invested heavily into the PVM side of the equation as well. I purchased a rune pouch. I purchased the jazz book, and what was the other thing I purchased? I purchased something else. Not remembering what it was right now. But
Grimoire.
No, not the Grimoire. That's a little too rich for my blood.
Too rich for your blood, Shane?
Yeah. Yeah. But nonetheless, it helped. All those things add up in their own unique ways. They help get the Zook kills so much faster. Safe spotting helps, and you know, just the discussion we had on the show the previous week helped as well. And you know, through the end of it, at the end of Free Death Week, I went and I did a Carapack hour, and I was actually able to get my Carapack times down to about 3 minutes and 20 seconds, to the point where most of the time now I'm skipping the lightning attack.
Nice.
So, and you know, I think when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, this entire PVM thing that started with the first Elder God Wars front is just something that I've really started to enjoy. Ah, yes, the other one was the Essence of Finality, so I could use the Guthic Staff special.
Okay.
So, but I've been enjoying myself, and like I said earlier in the show, I will do daily Reaper tasks over daily Slayer tasks.
Well, get ready, because you got 10 days of Slayer, or 10 days of Reaper coming.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And, you know, I look back to this all starting at Carapack and a little bit before with when I surprised everybody at that round table and killed the Raxxer. I think that was honestly the start of it, and I'm glad I did that.
You definitely surprised a lot of people.
Yeah. And you know, the video I sent you of the Glacier kill before that was also hard mode Glacier. Granted, it was 0%, but it is what it is.
Yeah, it was pretty smooth.
Oh. What can I say? I'm enjoying PVM, and that's something that is hugely different for the show, I think. But, of course, nonetheless, we are heading into Double XP Live, so there's going to be lots of other stuff happening aside from that. As I mentioned, we do have our Patreon roundtable that'll be happening next Saturday, which is the 12th, I think, of November, if I'm getting my days right. No, 13th of November is the date. We're doing that. I think we're doing that one in the evening, so we'll send out information. And because it's Double XP, everybody's, of course, invited to it. But, of course, share it with your friends, share the show with your friends, subscribe to the podcast if you want to have it automatically delivered to you. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Amazon. So you can listen on your favorite A or E devices, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, and of course YouTube, closing in on 1,000 subscribers. So if you haven't subscribed yet there, please do subscribe, leave a like. It greatly helps the show out. And with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSVNB Update. See you then, everyone. Take care.
See ya.